T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I got to ask him about this right off the bat, because tennis players do fire their coaches a lot. I've noticed.
Is it like a swing coach in golf?
I'm not sure. That's why James Blake, I think, would be much more of an expert on this subject than I would. He joins us here on the SEC CU Fan Hotline. James, thanks so much. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you? I hear it sounds like I got it right in the middle of a tennis discussion.
We were just chatting a little bit about coaches and why tennis players seem to change coaches so often, even when they're being successful. I mean, this young lady, Osaka, won back-to-back Grand Slams and then ends up, she wants a new coach anyway.
Oh, man, how much time do you guys have? Tennis?
We got plenty. The Padre game doesn't start till 7 o'clock, so go for it.
It's such an interesting dynamic, because if you think about it, most team sports, you got a coach that's paid by the team to tell the players what to do. But in tennis, you're a player that's paying the coach to tell you what to do. So if he tells you something you don't want to hear, then you can just say, well, I'm paying the bills, you're fired, and get out of here, and I don't want to hear it. And so some players, you have to figure out, that coach needs to figure out, what's the best way to do it? Should I handle this player with kid gloves? Should I give them, you know, tough love? What should I do? And so sometimes it meshes well, sometimes it doesn't. And then other times it's just a personality. It's a one-on-one. I mean, it's somewhat akin to a marriage. You're traveling with this person 30, 35 weeks out of the year. And if they do something, you know, with their personality traits that just rub you the wrong way, and you can't get along with them personally for that long, that amount of time spent together, then it just may not work. So I think it's very difficult being a tennis coach. And part of the reason I have not ventured into that realm, but it really is a tightrope that you're walking to make sure that you mesh well with the player, you give them the X's and O's right, and then you're able to kind of handle each other and handle the ups and downs of your boss being the person you have to tell what to do. So it's a little bit of a difficult situation. I don't envy a lot of those tennis coaches out there.
Interesting points.
James Blake joins us, former tennis pro, former world number 4.
Number 4?
Men's tennis player.
Can you imagine
player.
Being number 4 at anything?
No, I cannot.
I don't care what it is. That's amazing.
James, I want to ask you a little bit about the performance of Corey Gauff. How impressive is it for a 15-year-old to not only beat a pro, but to beat somebody like Venus Williams at Wimbledon?
It's incredible. We gave her a wild card in Miami Open. I'm the tournament director there, and we knew for sure she was something special. She's 15 years old. She's won junior Grand Slams, and then she just has that quality that you can tell it's going to translate so well to the pro game. And she's a big server, big hitter, and she's got like that focus. You know, she knows what she wants to do, and she was in awe, I think, of the moment after she won with Venus. But going into it, it was another day at the office. She went into it, and she performed well, and she beat really her idol, someone that she looked up to. And she said she grew the confidence to say to her afterwards that, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. And she said she's wanted to say that to her for a long time, but she finally got the courage to say it after she beat her. So, you know, she went into that, and to have that kind of ability when you're playing your idol, it's true. So she's going to be around for many years and someone to look out for.
That's good. We got an up-and-comer here on the women's side. And speaking of Venus Williams, I'm looking at your bio, James. Sorry. You and Venus Williams are the same age.
Yeah.
39. I mean, that's impressive that she's playing at this high level. That's what I mentioned to Tony. But the Williams sisters, we're just in general, there's always been a little bit of controversy surrounding. I'm not really so sure why. I've always just been so impressed with them on and off the court, and I think they've conducted themselves beautifully. There's been a couple of little things here and there over the course of a 20-year career, but they have been amazing for this sport, and I think that they deserve a lot of credit for what they've done. Are you on that page?
Yeah, the amount of credit they deserve is just amazing. And like you said, she's my age. I'm 39. I can't imagine playing. I run around with my kids and play soccer with them for a half an hour, and I'm sore for 2 days. And she can still play at this level. Serena's still playing at 37. These women were on tour when they were 14 and 15 years old.
I mean,
that kind of a length of a career and growing up in the public spotlight. And, like you said, there's going to be a couple moments here and there. But you put any kid in front of that kind of public spotlight and scrutiny for 20 years, and of course there's going to be some indiscretions, some times on the court where you lose your temper. It's a heated battle out there. And so, of course, there's going to be those. But what they've done for the game, I mean, there might not be Sloane Stephens, Madison Keys, Corey Goff, and so many others like them that love the game if it wasn't for looking up to Serena and Venus Williams. So they deserve a ton of credit. And I think what gets lost sometimes is the longevity, the fact that they're still playing and still love the game. Both of them could have retired 5 years ago, never needed to think about money in their lives, never needed to think about legacy in their lives, but they still love the game and they're contributing. And, you know, there's more and more women looking up to them and seeing them as idols. So I'm really, really proud of them. I get along with both of them very well. They're somewhat different off the court, but they're both just such great people and good role models.
James, I want to ask you a little bit about the state of American tennis on the men's side. Clearly on the women's side, they got that taken care of. Why do you why do you think that is, that the men have had a more difficult time competing at the level that we see the Williams sisters compete at, as we've seen Sloane Stephens compete at? Why do you think the men have had a more difficult time establishing themselves as dominant as the women have?
Well, a couple of things. One is, I think it's somewhat cyclical. I think sometimes in tennis, there's certain countries that are dominant, and then it switches around and it moves. And, you know, we've got two of the greatest players of this generation in from one small country in Switzerland. You got Spain with Rafa Nadal. He had a few other players that stepped up and won a lot of events. But I think so. It's been on a little bit of a down cycle compared to the really, really up cycles that the men's game had when they had Sampras, Agassi, Chang, Courier, Todd Martin, Mal Washington. You had unbelievable players for a long time there.
Yep.
And so I think there was a little bit of the expectations. And then you had Andy Roddick, myself, Marty Fish. And then it was almost as if tennis fans then were saying, well what more? We expect even more out of you. And now for a little bit while since we've retired, people are saying, well, now you can't, you guys aren't even getting to the Andy and James and Marty level. So there was a little bit of the expectation. And, you know, it's difficult. And right now in this generation, it's also difficult because there have been a few guys that are extremely greedy. Between Roger, Rafa, Novak, and Andy Murray, I mean, those are four of the greatest players we've ever seen in this entire game. And so it's really difficult for anyone outside of that big four to win any of the Grand Slams. I mean, Del Potro's won one, Gaudio won one, Cilic won one. Wawrinka's won three, but outside of that, it's been so difficult to get through and win a Grand Slam. So, really, no country outside of those that big four has been extremely successful. And I think the expectations for American fans are so high that's what they sort of hang their hat on, is Grand Slam titles. And we haven't had one since 2003 with Andy Roddick. And I think we got a bunch of young guys that have abilities, but it's going to take a few more years for them to develop.
James Blake, very great, obviously fantastic tennis player. As Tony mentioned, number four in the world at one point, 10 career titles. But I think so much more than that, James. And, you know, I'm looking at some of the things that you've been honored with on the ATP Tour. The Arthur Ashe Humanitarian of the Year Award in 2008, I would think, stands out in anybody's life. Arthur Ashe is one of the great athletes of the 20th century, I mean, if I may say, and maybe even higher up on the list than that. So you've been honored with some great stuff, and I know that you've done a lot of things outside the sport, speaking to kids and keeping the sport alive. Talk a little bit about that side of it and what tennis has kind of allowed you to do, your platform in tennis has allowed you to do.
Yeah, well, Arthur Ashe, you know, I think he's always been my idol and role model, mainly because he was my dad's idol. And my dad didn't have a lot of idols or people he told me about or spoke to me about. I thought that, you know, these people are people to look up to. And Arthur Ashe was the one. And that's what got him into tennis. So through that, it's indirectly how I got into tennis. And to receive the Arthur Ashe Humanitarian Award was definitely one of the biggest moments of my career. It was akin to my mom when I won my first sportsmanship award, thinking, you know, that can't be right. I'm more proud of you for winning a sportsmanship award than any other trophy that you win, because it means that, you know, it's something you can control. And that's the same as you said for the Humanitarian Award. That was from starting the efforts I started with the Thomas Blake Sr. Fund, which turned into the James Blake Foundation. And that raised money for cancer research for my dad, who passed away in 2004. and was a patient at Sloan Kettering. So we've donated over $1 million in the year since then in terms of helping raise money for early detection and cancer research. And so, yeah, I always looked up to Arthur Ashe. That was something that was special for me. And since then, I definitely have spoken to a few companies, a few organizations where I want to continue doing that and just talk to them about my career and what it meant to me and my role models and what it means to achieve your goals and to how you get to that point. You know, the small achievable goals that you have every day and getting it. I had a rough middle of my career where I got injured and then sick, and it seemed like it would be impossible for me to think of ever being number four in the world. And you know, you just try to get better every single day. And I like talking to people about that, about what they think they can do to get better every single day. And it makes it just so that everything is achievable. You know, you can get better tomorrow. So why can't you get better the next day and the next day and the next day? And before you know it, a year, 2, 5 years later, you're doing something you never would have thought was possible. So I love that ability to talk to kids and also let them know that I was in the situation a lot of them were in. I started playing tennis at the Harlem Junior Tennis Program, an all-volunteer-based program, and grew up in areas that weren't necessarily always known for tennis hotbeds, and went on to do what I did in tennis, and always with my dad preaching education, and education being the backdrop, which is why I went to college and went to Harvard. And so I wanted to show that it's possible to do that and still be focused on tennis as much as you want to be a pro.
I'm sorry, Tony. Can you come on once a week and give us a little pep talk like that every week? We'd all appreciate that, James. It's very cool.
I would love it. But the Padres don't seem to need it. They're doing a lot better this year.
They're doing a heck of a lot better than they had in the past. James, you know, I had heard about you speaking, you know, through our mutual friend, Katie Temple.
Yeah.
She speaks very highly of you. Aside from that, what's retired life been like? I mean, you go from being an athlete where you're dumping everything into it. Now you've moved on. Mm-hmm. You're kind of doing the speaking circuit and talking to kids and different businesses and groups. What are you enjoying the retired life?
I love retired life. I'm lucky because I understand so much how people can struggle with retired life when you've been extremely selfish as an athlete, and it's been so much about your schedule, your training, your eating, your sleeping. Everything is on you. But when I retired, we had one daughter and we had another on the way. So I immediately was able to transition to being hopefully a good dad, someone that's there and being around the family. And that that made it so much easier to change my goals and my focus to being extremely from being extremely selfish to being extremely selfless.
Yeah.
And what I learned from that is how much you can enjoy that, how much you can get out of it, and how much you can grow as a person and love what you're doing off the court. And so I love being a part of my family. I took some time totally away from tennis, and that was great for me. And it also made me realize that I do also still love the game. I love the fact that I learned so much from it. I love the fact that I still have some knowledge of the game without being able to physically compete, which is why then I got into a little bit of commentary and I became a tournament director in Miami Open. So it gave me a way to still be involved in the sport, obviously without being able to compete physically. So I've really loved it. And it's given me a chance to be involved and be involved almost at my own pace and not need to be on the road 30 weeks out of the year, not need to be training every morning at 8 a.m. and sore every single day and every single night. And I'm home a lot for the kids, and I pick them up from school a lot. I drop them off at school a lot. I'm at soccer games. It's something that I love. I love being able to be home with my family as much as I can and still being involved in the sport that I love.
One of the real good guys of sports, James Blake, and I'm glad we're able to share him with you guys out there. Thanks for joining us, James. Enjoy the rest of Wimbledon, and I hope we're able to catch up with you again.
Absolutely.
Really enjoyed the conversation. It's fun for me to talk some tennis. I'm kind of the resident tennis guru on the on this particular show, so I want to get into some more tennis with you one of these days, but thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.